Chapter 21. The door to the pit closes behind me, and I am alone. I have not walked this tunnel since the day of the choosing ceremony. I remember how I walked it then, my footsteps unsteady, searching for light. I walk it sure-footed now. I don't need light anymore. It has been 4 days since I spoke to Tori. Since then, Erudite has released 2 articles about abnegation. The first article accuses abnegation of withholding luxuries, like cars and fresh fruit, from the other factions in order to force their belief in self-denial on everyone else. When I read it, I thought of Will's sister, Kara, accusing my mother of hoarding goods. The second article discusses the failings of choosing government officials based on their faction, asking why only people who define themselves as selfless should be in government. It promotes a return to the democratically elected political systems of the past. It makes a lot of sense, which makes me suspect it is a call for revolution wrapped in the clothing of rationality. I reach the end of the tunnel. The net stretches across the gaping hole, just as it did when I last saw it. I climb the stairs to the wooden platform, where 4 pulled me to solid ground and grabbed the bar that the net is attached to. I would not have been able to lift my body up with just my arms when I first got here, but now I do it almost without thinking and roll into the center of the net. Above me are the empty buildings that stand at the edge of the hole, and the sky. It is dark blue and starless. There is no moon. The articles troubled me, but I had friends to cheer me up, and that is something. When the first one was released, Christina charmed one of the cooks in the Dauntless Kitchens, and he let us try some cake batter. After the second article, Uriah and Marlene taught me a card game, and we played for 2 hours in the dining hall. Tonight, though, I want to be alone. More than that, I want to remember why I came here, and why I was so determined to stay here that I would jump off a building for it, even before I knew what being dauntless was. I work my fingers through the holes in the net beneath me. I wanted to be like the dauntless I saw at school. I wanted to be loud and daring and free like them. But they were not members yet. They were just playing at being dauntless. And so was I, when I jumped off that roof. I didn't know what fear was. In the past 4 days, I faced 4 fears. In one, I was tied to a stake, and Peter set a fire beneath my feet. In another, I was drowning again, this time in the middle of an ocean, as the water raged around me. In the third, I watched as my family slowly bled to death. And in the fourth, I was held at gunpoint and forced to shoot them. I know what fear is now. Wind rushes over the lip of the hole and washes over me, and I close my eyes. In my mind, I stand at the edge of the roof again. I undo the buttons of my gray abnegation shirt, exposing my arms, revealing more of my body than anyone else has ever seen. I ball the shirt up and hurl it at Peter's chest. I open my eyes. No, I was wrong. I didn't jump off the roof because I wanted to be like the dauntless. I jumped off because I already was like them, and I wanted to show myself to them. I wanted to acknowledge a part of myself that abnegation demanded that I hide. I stretch my hands over my head and hook them in the net again. I reach with my toes as far as I can, taking up as much of the net as possible. The night sky is empty and silent, and for the first time in 4 days, so is my mind. I hold my head in my hands and breathe deeply. Today the simulation was the same as yesterday. Someone held me at gunpoint and ordered me to shoot my family. When I lift my head, I see that 4 is watching me. I know the simulation isn't real, I say. You don't have to explain it to me, he replies. You love your family. You don't want to shoot them. Not the most unreasonable thing in the world. And the simulation is the only time I get to see them, I say. Even though he says I don't, I feel like I have to explain why this fear is so difficult for me to face. I twist my fingers together and pull them apart. My nail beds are bitten raw. I've been chewing them as I sleep. I wake to bloody hands every morning. I miss them. You ever just miss your family? 4 looks down. No, he says eventually. I don't. but that's unusual. It is unusual. So unusual it distracts me from the memory of holding a gun to Caleb's chest. What was his family like that he no longer cares about them? I pause with my hand on the doorknob and look back at him. Are you like me? I ask him silently. Are you divergent? Even thinking the word feels dangerous. His eyes hold mine, and as the silent seconds pass, he looks less and less stern. I hear my heartbeat. I have been looking at him too long, but then he has been looking back, and I feel like we are both trying to say something the other can't hear, though I could be imagining it. Too long, and now even longer. My heart even louder, his tranquil eyes swallowing me whole. I push the door open and hurry down the hallway. I shouldn't be so easily distracted by him. I shouldn't be able to think of anything but initiation. The simulations should disturb me more. They should break my mind, as they have been doing to most of the other initiates. Drew doesn't sleep. He just stares at the wall, curled in a ball. Al screams every night from his nightmares and cries into his pillow. My nightmares and chewed fingernails pale by comparison. Al's screams wake me every time, and I stare at the springs above me and wonder what on earth is wrong with me, that I still feel strong when everyone else is breaking down. Is it being divergent that makes me steady, or is it something else? When I get back to the dormitory, I expect to find the same thing I found the day before, a few initiates lying on beds or staring at nothing. Instead, they stand in a group on the other end of the room. Eric is in front of them with a chalkboard in his hands, which is facing the other way, so I can't see what's written on it. I stand next to Will. What's going on? I whisper. I hope it isn't another article, because I'm not sure I can handle any more hostility directed at me. Rankings for stage 2, he says. I thought there weren't any cuts after stage 2, I hiss. There aren't. It's just a progress report, sort of. I nod. The sight of the board makes me feel uneasy, like something is swimming in my stomach. Eric lifts the board above his head and hangs it on the nail. When he steps aside, the room falls silent, and I crane my neck to see what it says. My name is in the first slot. Heads turn in my direction. I follow the list down. Christina and Will are 7th and 9th, respectively. Peter is 2nd, but when I look at the time listed by his name, I realize that the margin between us is conspicuously wide. Peter's average simulation time is 8 minutes. Mine is 2 minutes, 45 seconds. Nice job, Triss, Will says quietly. I nod, still staring at the board. I should be pleased that I am ranked 1st, but I know what that means. If Peter and his friends hated me before, they will despise me now. Now I am Edward. It could be my eye next, or worse. I search for Al's name and find it in the last slot. The crowd of initiates breaks up slowly, leaving just me, Peter, Will, and Al standing there. I want to console Al, to tell him that the only reason that I'm doing well is that there's something different about my brain. Peter turns slowly, every limb infused with tension. A glare would have been less threatening than the look he gives me, a look of pure hatred. He walks toward his bunk, but at the last second, he whips around and shoves me against a wall, a hand on each of my shoulders. I will not be outranked by a stiff, he hisses, his face so close to mine I can smell his stale breath. How did you do it, huh? How the hell did you do it? He pulls me forward a few inches, and then slams me against the wall again. I clench my teeth to keep from crying out, though the pain from the impact went all the way down my spine.